Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Romesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Shawley, bringing you the best of my Times Radio show. You can listen live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1, on your DAB radio, on your smart speaker, or download the Times Radio app. Today, coming to you from Manchester for the Conservative Party conference. I've just stepped outside, so I'm between the conference centre and the Midland Hotel. It's just started drizzling, obviously, because we're in Manchester. Coming up on today's episode of the podcast, we've got the latest Times Radio focus group.
Well, obviously, I want Labour to come in power. I decided that a while ago. I'd avoid Conservatives because they've let me down. I've been a Conservative voter for as long as I can remember.
James Johnson, former Number 10 pollster, in the chair, asking people who voted Conservative in 2019, now say they're going to vote Labour. Is there anything Rishi Sunak can do to get them back? That's coming up in just a moment, but first, it's time to talk to these two.
The Columnists on Times Radio.
And we're joined live here on the Times Radio stand by Rachel Sylvester, as ever on a Monday. Hello, Rachel.
Hi, Matt.
And Ian Martin. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning.
Are you having a nice time?
Yeah, it's all right, actually, as party conferences go. It seems a bit quiet.
A bit quiet. There aren't many people here.
Yeah, though we both got stuck in the queue to get in this morning, so it's clearly busier today than yesterday.
But they did say that because there wasn't a separate media entrance because there were so few people.
Oh, right. Well, that's good investigative journalism. I failed.
I saw Michael Gove in his running gear this morning in the queue, so everyone is having to queue up. It was quite a sight.
It's very odd. The exhibition hall, where normally it's kind of full of businesses, lobbyists, it's basically Conservative Party branded stands, isn't it?
An awful lot of them are. So between so looking out over the sort of coffee shop bit here, there's an awful lot of stuff which would normally be elsewhere has been dragged into this room.
And then everything's really big.
Normally, behind that black curtain is where the speeches are. That's the media room, and the speeches are happening in the side room they used to put the media in.
But we can see from here Conservative Party stand, Conservative Friends, Conservative, there's a youth thing. It's sort of a lot of Tory branded exhibition stands.
And a lot of businesses have just decided to put all their money in being at Labour conference, and a lot of PR agencies and lobbyists. It would be quite funny, actually, if the general election produced some sort of surprise and they had to rush back.
If only to annoy the lobbyists.
Fascinating, though. You can sort of tell what business thinks is going to happen, for sure.
Well, last year at Labour conference, it'll be interesting to see what it's like next week, Labour was sort of a bit surprised by just how many suits there were.
Yeah.
You know, corporate... You know, schmoozing.
I think it's going to be even more of that this year. It's just the expectation of business that there is going to be a change of government. Which looks pretty likely at the moment.
Well, there might not be that many people here, but one person who is here today is Liz Truss.
Her
spin doctor has been going around telling everyone in person what time she's arriving. In fact, I think it's about now. So set your watches. She's appearing at this growth rally a bit later on. It's interesting, Ian, some of the people I've spoken to have said that even though they agree with her, that she's not the right person to be trying to sell this message exactly a year after her party conference sort of collapsed around her ears.
Yeah, I think you're putting it very politely. We're all getting those same press notices daily, actually, telling us when Liz Truss's next pronouncement is going to be. I think the only thing that people would really be interested in hearing from Liz Truss is some acknowledgement about the scale of the mistakes made. Whether you believe, I'm for low taxes, but I'm not an arsonist and not for blowing up the economy. And but there's been very little humility from her or acknowledgement that Margaret Thatcher was strategically, you know, very, very kind of bold, but and thought big, but tactically very, very careful.
Yeah,
she took years to do stuff which
up taxes to start with.
She put up taxes, yeah. But she also, I mean, she scrapped exchange controls on money going in and out of the country. Was very nervous about that, and took her 6 months to do that. And she was initially sceptical when Lawson and Howe took the proposal to it. Turned out to be one of the most transformative reforms of the 70s and 80s. So she was always, until you get to 87, she was always worried about overextending or exhausting her political capital. And of course, Liz Truss took a very different approach, which was to just sort of go for it and think that it was almost like a cartoon version of Margaret Thatcher,
yeah.
Or a kind of YouTube short version of the Thatcher years, yeah. So in 49 days.
But what's extraordinary is she hasn't acknowledged since, you know, the economy crashed at all and went belly up. It was a total disaster, including, as you say, this time last year, that there was a problem. She seems to be saying, I was right all along. I bumped into someone who used to work for her who said she's the only woman in politics who hasn't got a shred of imposter syndrome, and in fact she could do with a bit more of it, and it's, I think, a lot of Conservative MPs who are here who aren't her supporters, actually quite a lot of Conservative MPs aren't here apart from her supporters, but the ones who are really frustrated. I was speaking to one minister just now who was saying, you know, she's a sort of pound shop Boris Johnson. At least when Boris Johnson turned up, he would steal the show, but he did it with a real kind of charisma. He was always, in the past, the coming man, the potential prince over the water, whereas nobody really thinks Liz Truss is the coming woman. She was prime minister, she messed it up spectacularly, disastrously, and she won't admit it. It's very odd.
It does tell you something that when Boris Johnson isn't here in a blaze of self-publicity, which always used to be the sort of party conference circus.
It's really interesting because someone was saying to me last night that actually for about 10 years, Tory party conference was dominated by the Boris show.
Yeah.
When he was mayor, did he want to become prime minister? You bet.
Yeah.
These huge rallies that he would do with Conservative Home, the website, which were very well attended, and that's all gone now. And actually it means, I think it's very... For journalists trying to get a story going about famous last words, maybe there is some, there's going to be a massive split at conference in the next 24 hours. But for journalists trying to get a leadership narrative going, it's actually a bit sort of flat, really. I mean, you know, if Sunak loses, you know roughly who the contenders are going to be. And there isn't really any, there isn't that kind of energy at conference, which will suit Sunak just fine, actually.
Yeah, that's true. Because the Boris Johnson, you know, I remember sort of Manchester and Birmingham as well, sort of the news that Boris had arrived at a train station and he was sort of trapped by journalists the whole way through, and he'd turn up and wave a brick or a brush or whatever it might be. But that just doesn't work if you've beat, in Liz Truss's case, you've been Prime Minister and then you turn up.
Yeah.
You've been Prime Minister and crashed the economy. It's not sort of just you've been Prime Minister. It's you're not the potential great hope. You're the reminder of disaster.
Yeah. Let's move on, actually. Let's just take a listen on the question of tax cuts, which is the thing that she's calling for, which is one of those things, the more she calls for it, possibly the less likely it'll happen. Not least because the Labour Party, have you seen the Labour Party ad where they've put Rishi Sunak in Liz Truss's pocket?
Mm. Does anyone believe that, by the way?
No.
It's not really.
No. But on the other hand, I think people do still remember that they still know their mortgages have gone up, and they still feel there's a sense of incompetence around the Tory party because of Liz Truss. So they've lost, that was the moment they lost their reputation for economic
competence. I think just being in the same photo as Liz Truss is probably quite bad for his brand. Let's take a listen. This is Jeremy Hunt, was on Times Radio this morning talking about tax cuts. Let's take a listen.
If we want faster growth and an end to taxes ever ratcheting higher, it's possible to do that, but there are no shortcuts. At the moment, if we had big tax cuts, they would be inflationary because we'd be putting extra money into people's pockets. They would spend it and that would push up prices. I don't agree with people like the Institute for Fiscal Studies who say that this shift to a more highly taxed economy is likely to be permanent. It doesn't have to be permanent. You have to take the difficult decisions.
I mean, that just goes straight to the point that you were making, wasn't it? Yeah. It's one thing having the ambition of having lower taxes, but you do need to work out how you're going to get there. Just cutting them willy-nilly doesn't work.
And there's obviously a bit of a rebellion brewing with a group of Conservative MPs saying that they may not vote for the measures that are in the Autumn Statement. Let's see, I'd be surprised if that actually happens.
Yeah. But
it seems pretty obvious that they are going to do something on tax. He may let's see how much flexibility he has, but I think there'll be something in the spring as some kind of offer, which leads me to conclude that you're looking at an autumn election, because the old sort of Treasury view is that it takes about 6 months for measures to bed in for people to feel the effect. So I would say the row is in a sense a bit bogus, that it's clearly a holding statement,
and also the thing that this so-called tax pledge that they signed is actually about opposing any new tax rises. Well, don't think anyone thinks that they're going to do that. Let's just move on, because I want to ask you, Rachel, with your Education Commission hat on. Gillian Keegan, the Education Secretary today, is going to call for a ban on schools pupils using mobile phones during lessons and breaks. Now, I looked this up, and I wrote a front page story in The Times in February 2019 when Nick Gibb announced this exact thing. And, I mean, I didn't say this at the time because I was going to get a splash in The Times. It wasn't new then either. What does this tell us about the level of big thinking going on in the Department for Education?
Oh,
the
goodness.
Education Secretary's big announcement is a thing which they announce almost annually.
Yeah, and, you know, five Education Secretaries in a year, it really is not serious, and it's very depressing. What's interesting, though, is, as we've reported in The Times, if Rishi Sunak is going to announce the idea of a British baccalaureate to replace A-levels, that is pretty big, and that is radical. And that's something that the Times Education Commission endorsed, of course. But the problem with this mobile phone thing is that I agree with all of that, but on the other hand, you do need to integrate technology much more into schools.
Yeah.
So children do need to use their laptops. They do need to learn how to understand how AI is going to influence education. They need to think, and they need to acquire all those skills and learn how to interrogate the information that they find online rather than just learning facts.
And actually making it a part of your learning. Because actually my daughter's talked about this, about how they've done quizzes and things. They get told to, research. Because ultimately that's what they're going to be doing when they're at home doing homework. They'll be looking it up online. So, what do you think, Ian?
Well, I would just ask, don't schools effectively have this power anyway, really? Doesn't a head teacher who wants to ensure that people aren't using mobile phones during lessons can just say that that's the case? So it's a very strange story. And 5 years old.
5 years old.
Or even 10 years old.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't true.
Well, it's true.
It was true.
It was true that they were trying, that they were going to announce this.
It was true
this.
That Nick Gibb told me this.
Yes.
But it wasn't necessarily brand spanking new at the time.
Exactly.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, Matt Chorley on Times Radio.
Matt Chorley coming to you live from the Conservative Party conference in Manchester, still joined by Ian Martin and Rachel Sylvester. And we've now also been joined by Samuel Kasumu, who was Boris Johnson's race advisor in Number 10. And his book, The Power of the Outsider, is out now. Samuel, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Matt.
The Power of the Outsider, and you've come to the most insidery event in the world.
Oh, the great irony, of course.
Do you like the party conference?
Of course not.
Why are you here?
I don't know.
Well, we're glad that you are. We're glad that you are. And we should talk about the Conservative Party's relationship with the race. You were Boris Johnson's race advisor. What did you make, first of all, of Suella Braverman last week saying that multiculturalism had failed, that integration wasn't working? Is she right?
I found the speech quite strange, to be honest with you. Firstly, because I don't think Suella Braverman could give you a really accurate definition of multiculturalism. I was trying to figure out what she meant by that. Did she mean that we have too many people with different faiths, practicing faiths like Hinduism, like the Prime Minister does in the UK, because we're supposed to be a Christian country or what have you? Does she mean that we have too many foreign restaurants in the country, too many, like, I don't know, curry houses, Chinese restaurants, etc.? Or does she mean that the people choose to hang around with folks that are similar to themselves? But we all do that. You know, psychologists and sociologists will tell you that it is an innate natural disposition to hang around with that which is familiar. So I don't think she really understands what the term multiculturalism is, to be completely honest with you, and that's part of the problem. Also, I feel like some of the points she was trying to raise were probably about two decades too late. You know, Trevor Phillips used to talk about all these things in the late 90s and early 20s, which was very interesting at the time, but we've progressed as a nation, and I think bluntly she's probably behind the times.
What did you make of it, Ian? Because there was, it strikes me that she was trying to conflate lots of things, and that wanting to crack down on the small boats is clearly her priority. But actually, if there are too many people in the UK, it's because they're arriving here legally under the government's immigration rules.
Yeah, but I think you're exactly right. I did read it as an argument about definitions, because the conception of multiculturalism, if you go back 20, 30 years ago, I mean, it in its origin, it was really about the idea that you had lots of different cultures, but you didn't have one unifying culture. So that's the argument I remember 30 years ago, people disputing. She was clearly saying that Britain has a successful multi-ethnic society, as one of the most successful multi-ethnic societies in Europe. But look how cleverly and various other members of the cabinet have disagreed with her. But I think exactly as you say around that question of the definition.
In fact, we could take a listen. This is James Cleverly, was on Times Radio yesterday explaining why he disagreed with Suella Braverman.
I think the fact that Suella is in the role that she's in, the Prime Minister's in the role that he's in, I and others are in these roles, show that we, as I say, almost uniquely in the world, have been brilliant at integrating people who have come to this country. And I think the really important point is that we continue to integrate and we do not allow this fragmentation. And I do sometimes worry that when people say multiculturalism, what they're talking about is that fragmentation.
So, I mean, what's so odd about having this conversation right now is that the Conservative Party's cabinet is the most diverse it's ever been.
Yeah.
To have the Prime Minister, the Foreign Secretary and the Home Secretary, all people of colour, it just seems a weird thing for the Conservative Party then sort of become embroiled in essentially a race row.
Yeah, well, firstly, the Conservative Party is not trying to be embroiled in a race row. Suella Braverman is trying to pick a fight with folks who are just going around living their ordinary lives. She's trying to distract people from the fact that she's a failed Home Secretary, bluntly. She hasn't stopped the boats. She will not stop the boats between now and the next general election. We do have, by any stretch of imagination, mass migration, total migration of over 1 million last year, net migration of past 600,000, all on her watch. She should be focusing on trying to fix or deal with those challenges and have really important conversations around the trade-offs. Do we want so many international students? How do you deal with skills shortages? How do we deal with the aging population? These are the questions that she should be answering in speeches, not trying to create wedge issues that bluntly just don't really exist. Most people in the country would agree that the current levels of migration are probably not sustainable for an island like this. And so that's not an issue. So there's no argument here. Yeah. The argument is completely between Suella Braverman and herself, and she needs to look in the mirror and try and sort it out.
Rachel?
I read this completely as a leadership thing from Suella Braverman. She's trying to position herself as that figurehead of the Tory right for the leadership contest that she believes is coming after the general election, because she's decided that Rishi Sunak is going to lose and is going to be out.
Yeah, I tell you one thing that Conservatives like above anything else, and one of the most unifying factors, is we love to win. All right, behaving the way Suella is behaving, speaking the way Suella is speaking, is not how you win an election. I would be very surprised if come the next general election Suella Braverman is still the Home Secretary, because if she is, Rishi Sunak will have to essentially just write off any of his chances of winning.
Have you spoken to her about this?
Suella?
Yeah.
No, I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, when I was in Downing Street, I was closer to Priti Patel. I worked with her on things like the response to the Windrush scandal, etc. So me and Priti were very much aligned when I ran to be the London Mayor. She was one of my first backers. Suella, I know guys in her team, but I'm struggling to understand her reason for existence, to be honest.
And if there's lots of ifs in this, if the Conservatives do lose the next election and she becomes leader, could you stay in a Suella Braverman Conservative Party?
Next question.
Do you think she's racist or playing the race card?
I think she has personal challenges.
So do you think she's racist?
I think she has personal challenges, and some of those challenges are probably because of some of her experiences growing up. She lived in the London Borough of Brent, which is obviously one of the most diverse boroughs in the country, and she's evolved some of her views about certain groups because of those personal experiences. I always say, seek first to understand and then to be understood. So when people express themselves in very peculiar ways, very often it's because if you track back to some of their experiences growing up, there are probably some issues there that she probably needs to talk to someone about. But if she does need to do that, I'm not so sure she's fit to be the Home Secretary of one of the most successful, diverse countries in the world. It's frankly embarrassing, and probably she needs to, you know, reflect on whether or not she's in the right position.
And some people will be listening to this and think there's a very weird thing. We're having a conversation with a young black guy who's in the Conservative Party about whether or not the Asian Home Secretary is racist. How does that work?
Well, Priti Patel is the Home Secretary, she's not racist.
Yeah.
James Cleary is Foreign Secretary, he's not racist. Yeah. The Prime Minister is someone of Indian heritage, he's not racist. I never called Suella Braverman racist. I just think she has some personal challenges that she needs to deal with. And guess what? You can be black, white, Asian and have personal challenges. That's the beauty of the human race. We all have issues. We all have things we're trying to grapple with and deal with. But we can be respectful. We can be humble. We can try to bring people and carry people along with us. And Suella Braverman is not really up for that. She's too busy probably trying to become the next leader of the Conservative Party, which I doubt she will be, because I think our members are far more sensible than to do such a thing.
I'll try once more. If she becomes leader, will you stay in the party?
Next, or is that the last question? So no more questions?
No more questions, so you have to answer it, yes or no.
I'm focused on myself and not Suella.
I mean, that doesn't sound like a yes.
I think so. Look, I believe in people being able to redeem themselves. Mm. I think it is not too late for Suella to change tack, become more tactful, more respectful, more interesting, more nuanced. And so I hope maybe party conference and James Cleverly giving a kick up the backside will be that she needs to change course and be a better Home Secretary and focus on her job and not giving nonsense speeches in Washington.
Samuel Kasumu there, a former race advisor for Boris Johnson, and Rachel Sylvester and Ian Martin. You can read them in The Times. Just get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/Times Red Box. Up next, it's the Focus Group.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
You're listening to the Redbox Podcast. Now it's time for this.
The Big Thing on Times Radio.
Yeah, every month we carry out a focus group here on Times Radio with former number 10 pollster James Johnson, now runs JL Partners, of course. And James is here. James, how are you?
Hi, Matt. Very well.
Well, this is exciting, doing a focus group at conference. So the Conservative Party faithful can stand by the Times Radio stand and listen to how badly they're going down with members of the public.
Yeah, and be clear that, you know, we're not stitching the focus group up. We haven't made anyone up. You know, they're real people.
Real people. Now, who are the people in this month's group?
So we have gone for something a little bit different this time. We've gone for people that voted Conservative in 2019 and now say they would vote Labour. So it's that switcher group, a little bit harder for the Conservatives to win back, perhaps, than those undecideds we usually speak to. And they're from three key constituencies: Carshalton and Wallington, and also Bassett Law. So three key constituencies to the next election.
So these are, they did vote Conservative, they've switched, and we're saying, is there anything that would get you back, basically?
Exactly.
Okay, but let's dive in then. Let's be honest, the group weren't feeling very upbeat about the state of the country and the cost of living really front and centre. Let's take a listen.
There's so many areas where things seem to be really out of control and negative.
NHS is in an absolute mess, massive waiting lists on there. They've borrowed so much money. People coming into the country who don't seem to be able to get on top of that. Nothing seems to be going right, really.
Nothing seems to be going really well at the minute.
I feel like over the last 10 years of my life, it's just kind of gone in a downward direction. Interest rates through the roof. Standard living's dropped as well. Even your local trip to Asda or Tesco, you know, fuel prices, inflation. It's just looking like we're in a really bad spot.
I'm a big Conservative fan, and yeah, I'm not as much anymore. I'm not happy with the way the country's heading at the moment, and I don't think they're doing the things that they should be doing.
I mean, that's pretty grim listening for the... I mean, these are people who voted for Boris Johnson in 2019. It's not a bunch of lefties who found to kick the Tories. And it's a sort of sense of despair and despondency and that nothing can be done. You know, guy there saying, I was a big fan of the Tories, but I'm not anymore. You know, they've made that mental leap, it feels.
Yeah, I think they have. And it's really one of those things I think we were saying earlier in the year. You know, they haven't really, these switches moved on from some of the chaos that was happening at this conference last year. You know, whether it was Liz Truss and on the, you know, the tax U-turn and what they saw as general Tory incompetence and chaos. And that really hasn't left them. I think their main issue is inaction. I think they've noticed that, you know, Rishi Sunak might be saying a few things that they like the sound of, but they don't feel like anything's changing because of it. And that's really difficult to shake for a politician.
It's interesting that. But let's move on then to this was them. You asked them to describe the performance of the government in one word.
Overwhelmed, maybe.
Shocking.
Disappointed.
Unorganised.
Lost.
Appalling.
Flailing.
I mean, I don't know what you can make of that. Put that in a word cloud, James.
It wouldn't be a very flattering one. Not going to form the basis of any birthday present for that one. I think, look, this is, they sort of, I always remember Deborah Mattinson, Gordon Brown's previous pollster, now polling for Keir Starmer. I remember an event I went to in 2017, and she was saying about how when she worked for Gordon Brown, she said a tipping moment was when the public started to feel sorry for him.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing, you know, that happening with these switches. It's not just that they think that the government's a bit nasty or a bit, you know, you've got the wrong priorities. They think that, and they think it's lost, and you know, they sort of feel like, you know, they're overwhelmed, they can't deal with it. And that's how they view Rishi as well, because they're not saying Rishi Sunak is strong, they're not saying, you know, he's trying to fight this tide, they're sort of saying that he's getting sort of sucked out with it as well.
There is a sort of slight, oh bless him.
There is. It's not great, that. That's something that actually Rishi Sunak will clearly be trying to turn around.
Yeah.
And you can see that in some of their messaging. I think you're going to see on Wednesday at the speech him trying to sort of come across as a bit stronger, a bit more in charge of things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in fact, let's take a listen then. This is what they had to say about Rishi Sunak.
He sort of doesn't really show how he really feels about anything. He seems very much like a mouthpiece.
But he doesn't seem like a real leader to me. Like David Cameron, I was a big fan of. He was a good leader, and but with Ricky, he's more of a businessman.
I think he has this idea of what being cool is, and you know, I think he was wearing Palm Angels at a press conference one time, and that just really put me off him.
So he's all about the money, isn't he? Do you know what I mean? He can't relate to the common working class people like us, people who sometimes need, you know, who have to graft two jobs sometimes.
He's probably the worst Conservative leader we've had.
I mean, not very positive, James, overall. And, I mean, the fact that one person called him Ricky isn't the biggest ringing endorsement.
No, it's not. Look, I mean, I don't think there was one positive.
No.
For those people who've been saying about our focus groups, oh, you know, you get people on every month who, you know, love Rishi Sunak, don't like Keir Starmer. This clearly does show that the switches are sort of a slightly different beast.
And that's partly because normally we have undecided swing voters, people who tell the market research company, you find them, I don't know how I'm going to vote. And actually, they're a big chunk of the electorate, but this is a slightly different chunk. These are people who have made that switch already, and it doesn't feel like they're going to... It's been a long time since we've had anyone say benefit of the doubt.
Yes, those days certainly
those days
seem
gone. Long gone. Well, sitting here in the big main hall, the sort of the conference exhibition area of the Tory Party Conference, there's lots of banners hanging down with Rishi Sunak's pledges on and long-term decisions for a brighter future. That's the slogan of the conference, but what do the group think about that?
Yeah, I feel like it's quite contradictory of a slogan, especially when we're looking at the HS2 and also the Rosebank oil that's just been agreed. And I just feel like there's all these little things that are meant to be amounting into a long-term future, but I feel like they're actually going the complete opposite way.
We need things to get better soon, not carry on like this or potentially get worse. So what is it, a better future? Will we see that better future, or are we talking, you know, another generation?
I don't really trust the party enough to believe that slogan. I don't want to wait a long time for a fix, and as well, they've been in power since 2010 and they've had plenty of time to try and fix the problems.
They need to do stuff right now, really. Because I don't think they'll be around to implement whatever it is he's dreaming of. Plus, the NHS doesn't have time on its hands to wait.
That's really interesting, James. So clearly, you know, Rishi Sunak's long-term... long-term decisions for a brighter future. Clearly trying to feed into a bit of David Cameron in 2014, 2015, the long-term economic plan. But they're just saying, what do you mean long-term? We need stuff done now. You've had 13 years. What do you mean long-term? Like, actually, maybe long-term decisions for a brighter future is... will be a better slogan for an opposition trying to come in than a government that's been in power for such a long time.
Yeah, look, I can certainly see what they're trying to do with that. They're trying to sort of set themselves apart from perhaps politicians that have chased votes in the past, in their sort of phrasing. But look, there's two things there. One is, as you say, they want fixes now. And the other is that they don't necessarily think the nature of decisions that are being made, such as, you know, rumours about HS2, such as changes on net zero, they don't necessarily think those in themselves are particularly long-term decisions. Yeah. And I think that, you know, one of the more acute criticisms or correct criticisms, I think, of Rishi Sunak's plan at the moment that I've seen is this idea that a lot of the announcements are about not doing things rather than about setting out a plan to do things, and you can see a bit of that come through there.
This is the problem with long-term decisions. They're not long-term decisions if the decision is to put off a ban on petrol cars or to put off building something. That's not a long-term decision. In fact, that feels like quite a short-term decision to get through the next 12 months.
No, I expect number 10's response to that would be, well, wait to the speech, you know, we've got more announcements to come, wait for the manifesto. But certainly not the best start for it, or at least they don't naturally associate with the Conservatives at this point in time. That could change, and also, you know, if stuff starts to change around them in the run-up to the election, that could latch on a little bit more, but at the moment it's not there.
It's also a big switch, given that at the start of the year you had five pledges, which were all five things we're going to do this year, and now suddenly he's doing long-term, you know.
Yes, and I see they're now badged at this conference on the banners. Yeah. They're now banners, our immediate priorities. So, those five now, long-term later. Yeah. The voters not quite getting that.
Yeah, well, it turns out we can't really understand it either.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and on your smart speaker, Matt Chorley on Times Radio.
Very good morning to you. It's Matt Chorley coming to you live from the Conservative Party conference in Manchester. It's really starting to busy up, actually. There's a lot of sort of crowds of people. Actually, I think there might just be a queue for the coffee shop. But I've seen now several MPs. Michael Fabricant was here, and Deanna Davidson is loitering. She's going to do the egg and spoon race just after 11:30. I'm still joined on the Times Radio stand by James Johnson from JL Partners, former number 10 pollster, doing our monthly focus group here on Times Radio. Today with a group of voters from, remind me where they're from, James?
Bury, Bassetlaw, Carl Shorten and Warrington.
Very good. And they're people who voted Conservative in 2019 and now say they're going to vote Labour. So it's trying to get under the skin of why they're doing that
and what might tempt them back.
Certainly. And I just remembered, Matt, we didn't do our usual disclaimer at the start top of the show, which I should know off by heart by now. I should. Just to say, a focus group, not a poll. And that's the key thing that listeners need to realise. We're not trying to be representative here. We're digging deeper into the opinions underneath the polls. So if people say, oh, well, you know, all these people think X, the polls don't show that, it's not intended to be representative. And that's a really, really key point for us to get across.
Very good. Right. So we've done what they thought of Rishi Sunak, which is not a lot. But how did the group respond when asked to sum up Keir Starmer in one word?
Vague. The first word was actually watery, but I thought that's quite rude, so I've said change it to vague.
For me, it's a fresh start.
I can't think of a word, really, because I just don't know anything about the chap at all.
I'll be really honest, I don't know who he is.
I guess the word would be unsure.
I don't want to call him a liar, but some people do. I don't know, like going back on policies.
I would say probably typical politician, because when they're trying to get into power, all they do is slander the other party to try and make themselves look better.
This is just a reminder. This is a group of people who voted Conservative in 2019 and now say they'll vote Labour. Vague was about the most complimentary thing there, James.
Yeah, yeah, and even that lady had to revise it up from watery. and look, we had you know, someone in there who didn't know who Keir Starmer was as well. Look, this is just a reminder about where public opinion is at the moment. Very frustrated about Rishi Sunak, very let down by the Conservatives, but they are not warming to Keir Starmer. He's a sort of, not only he's a bit of a non-entity for them, but for some of them he's quite negative. You heard there somebody say, I've heard people say about him, he's a liar. You know, other people, he's a bit vague, he's wishy-washy. You can see how the Conservatives will be jumping on this in a campaign. And I think, by the way, going back to the slogan, that seems to be, I imagine that's partly what Number 10 are thinking. They want to position Rishi Sunak as the long-term guy who's going to make serious decisions and has a bit of purpose about him, whereas Keir Starmer is this sort of flip-flopper who doesn't really know what he stands for. And you can see the kernels of that there. The problem is that they're so negative about the Conservatives, it doesn't make a difference.
It goes back to what we talked before about how political parties use focus groups. You listen to how people are talking about your opponents, and then you find a way of sort of repeating that back to them, and then, you know, like take back control or get Brexit done. Those phrases which often come from normal people talking about it.
Yeah, and I think when we say flip-flopper and when people say that, I think it's really important to stress that when people said that about Ed Miliband or Jeremy Corbyn, they meant that those politicians were weak. Mm. When they say it about Keir Starmer, it's less weak, it's more sort of, what is he in this for? Is he just in this to get elected? And they don't like that. For all of his other faults, they didn't feel that about Jeremy Corbyn.
Well, let's move on. So this group all say they're going to vote Labour at the next election, but let's have a listen to how enthusiastic they feel about that.
Probably Labour, just simply because I've got fatigue from the Tories.
Well, I'd potentially spoil my vote, as I feel it gives a louder message.
I've always voted Labour up until last time. That's the only time I've ever voted Conservative. So it definitely won't be Conservative again.
Labour, just because, it's time for a change. And I don't think things can get much worse.
I don't think that things could get much worse. Put that on your battle bus.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, look, if you're Labour HQ listening to this, I think that you would be quite naive to assume these switches were locked in. Now that's not to say they're going to go back to the Conservatives, but I wonder whether the bigger risk is that, you know, they get sort of more excited by a sort of a Lib Dem or a Green, splits that anti-Tory vote a little bit, or they don't turn out at all. So, and remember, switches count twice. You lose them from the Conservatives, one vote down. Labour gains them, one vote up. So they're really important for Labour to try and lock in. And at the moment, Starmer's lack of enthusiasm means they are there now, but they're not locked in.
Actually, it also makes me think, with all the talk has gone quite quickly to Labour landslide, you know, big majority, you know. When that was the case in 2017, when you were there with Theresa, although you were there after the election in 2017, we must stress you were not involved in the 2017 election. But this sense that Theresa May was going to get a massive majority actually played its own part in the campaign, that people said, well, if that's going to happen, it's OK, I can vote for my decent local Labour MP or a Lib Dem or so on. You know, and actually this sense that Keir Starmer doesn't deserve a big majority, if that starts playing into it, people think, well, he's going to win anyway, so I can go off to the Greens or stick with the Tories or go to the Lib Dems. That just the narrative of what might happen in the election will play a part in it. Let's move on, because we want to make sure we get to this. because there's obviously a big choice this week. You know, last week we had Ed Davey at the Lib Dems, played crazy golf with him. So far, Rishi Sunak has declined my invitation to play crazy golf this week. We'll have Keir Starmer next week. Don't know what we're going to do with him. So you asked him to play Snog, Marry, Avoid. Why did you ask them to play that, James?
This is high-caliber intellectual polling. That's all we do at JL Partners. And we wanted to do this for a bit of a laugh for radio, but also to get a sense of perhaps the reasons they might give and what they might tell
us about
politicians.
To try and get under the skin of people's knee, you know, immediate guttural sort of reactions to the three leaders. So here we are then. This is Rishi Sunak, Keir Starmer, Ed Davey, Snog, Marry, Avoid.
Well, obviously, I want Labour to come in power. I decided that a while ago. I'd avoid Conservatives because they've let me down. I've been a Conservative voter for as long as I can remember. And yeah, I guess I'd snog the Lib Dem guy just because I don't know much about him and it's a little one-time kiss.
I'd marry Keir Starmer. I want to give him a go. I would snog Ed because I know nothing about him and I'd probably want to get to know the Lib Dems a little more going into the next election, and I'd avoid Rishi.
Give the Lib Dems I don't know much about him, so snog him, get to know him, avoid Rishi Sunak. Sounds terrible, that, don't it? And marry Keir Starmer, give him a chance.
I just don't think Ed would be, yeah, the snog. I don't think he would. Sorry, Ed. Do quite like Ed, but not in that way.
I'd marry Rishi Sunak because he's rich, and then divorce him pretty soon after. Snog, Keir Starmer.
Ed Davey.
Oh, no, yes, no, Keir Starmer. Yeah, just because. And avoid the other one, just because I don't know who he is, so it'd be quite easy to avoid him.
Avoid Rishi Sunak. Marry Keir Starmer, give him a chance. And I'll snog Ed, just as a quick cheeky one, see what he's about. If I like what I see, then getting a divorce with Keir and getting a second marriage with Ned.
Well, Mrs. Davey needs to look out, by the sound of it.
They're very trusting of Ed Davey, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're sort of, you know, very happy to, you know, give him a bit of a snog and, you know, they're pretty...
I mean, mainly because they don't know who he is.
Yeah. They're very trusting.
Very trusting.
But obviously, something about Lib Dems.
Yes.
Marry Rishi Sunak because he's rich. You know, that speaks to the...
Again, it's just a way of getting to how people talk about politicians.
We're really trying to justify this, aren't we, Matt?
Exactly. I thought it was very funny.
I know it is. And also, the thing is that even those who marry Keir Starmer, they did think there might be a divorce coming down further down the line. So
they weren't full in.
They weren't.
You also then, because obviously on Wednesday, Rishi Sunak will be in the. I was going to say the big hall. It's not the big hall. The small hall over there where they're doing the speeches. And you asked him what music should he walk on to when he delivers his speech on Wednesday.
What's the Star Wars theme?
Imperial March.
Yeah. I don't know. Just straight away, that was like, yeah, that's his tune. I don't think that we can trust him and he's gone to the dark side.
We're living on a prayer.
I don't know why, but it's popped in my head, The Show Must Go On by Queen. And I think it's because it's actually a really sad song and it's, you know, he's dying at that point, but he's just got to keep going.
Wow.
Yeah, that does get us something, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's the sort of, you know, the animal they feel sorry for
the
there.
The show must go on. Was Freddie Mercury really ill when he sang that?
I do not know. I'm not the person to ask, unfortunately. I mean, Darth Vader, you know, walking on.
That's the first time we've had singing in the focus group, I think.
It is. She was great. She was singing along quite a lot of it afterwards. but, you know, I mean, that is, you know, but The Show Must Go On because he's sort of dying, plus he's a bit evil because he's Darth Vader. It's not fantastic, is it?
No, it's really not. It's really not. So, if you were, and maybe you'll bump into him in the bar later with Rishi Sunak, if you were advising Rishi Sunak now, what would you be telling him based on that group of people who voted Conservative in 2019? They've moved to Labour. How does he get them back?
I think he's got to try and find things over the next year or so that are actually going to make a difference to people's lives. Now, he can't just rebuy the economy overnight. So he needs to find some of these policy things that are actually making a difference around people, you know, to their, you know, children's lives, to, you know, to theirs. Not massive fixes, but just things that feel like, oh, they're actually able to do something. And then make sure the message sings, because all of these different policies, they're all well and good, but it's a bit like baubles without the Christmas tree if you don't have a message and a brand behind it. And they'll want to distinguish that very, very sharply with Keir Starmer, because that's the opening for the Conservatives. If you're listening to this, you're thinking Keir Starmer is weak on with the voters, and you want to contrast that, but you've got to have that positive vision in order to do so.
James, it's lovely to see you. Thank you for... actually, while you're here, do you want to go at the steady hand game?
Oh, go on then.
So, so we had Victoria Atkins, the Treasury Minister, did the steady hand game. It got 49 seconds with no buzzes. So
right.
We had 5 seconds for each buzz. Michael Fabricant did it during the news and then refused to do it on the radio.
Okay.
So you need to go around the steady hand game, the Times Radio steady hand game, while reciting Rishi Sunak's 5 pledges.
Okay.
As quick as you can to get on the leaderboard. So let's put a mic there so we can hear the buzzer machine.
Okay, very good. Right.
James Johnson, on your marks, get set, go!
Okay, halve inflation, stop the votes, cut waiting lists, grow the economy, reduce the debt.
Very good. You've now just got a clear run to... So the first half...
That's one buzz.
That's another one.
It was all going so well.
There's 2 buzzes.
That's quite hard, this, isn't it?
There's 3 buzzes.
Oh, dear.
That's 4.
Oh, now I've got to turn it. Now I haven't got any turn. Oh,
5
dear.
Buzzes. 6 buzzes.
Okay.
Right.
5 pledges, 6 buzzes.
Yeah, what was the time on that? 28. Plus 30. 28 seconds. 58. I mean, not bad, given that... So you are slower than Victoria Atkins, but you did buzz it 6 times.
This is why I'm here to do the focus groups on Times Radio, not the electric game.
James, lovely to see you. James Johnson there for JL Partners. We'll be back. Actually, we're doing another focus group next week, are we? Off the back of party cover season.
We absolutely are, for how people responded to Keir Starmer's speech.
And that's all we've got time for on today's episode of the podcast. Catch me live at the Tory Party Conference, 10 till 1, Tuesday and Wednesday. Then next week, I'll be live at the Labour Party Conference, Monday and Tuesday. And then next Friday, so Friday the 13th of October, you can come and see us doing the show live at the Cheltenham Literature Festival. Just go to cheltenhamliterafestivals.com to get tickets to the Times Radio debate. It's midday on Friday, October the 13th, as we ask, what year is it? Is it 97, 92, 74, 59? We'll discuss that with Patrick McGuire, Kate McCann, Aisha Azarika and John Curtis. That's the Times Radio debate at Cheltenham Literature Festival. Just go to cheltenhamfestivals.com and get your tickets. But for now, for me, Matt Jolly, it's goodbye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.